Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you five topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got
five on it. Wait, Gary Harris is now on the Bucks too?
That's what I just told you.
Who are the Bucks now? It's Giannis, it's Miles Turner, Gary Harris. This is a totally different team.
They're a bunch of guys who can probably win the East if Giannis has an MVP-type season. And the supporting role players do their jobs.
Interesting.
While the Bulls middle.
Would you like to hear what the Kings did?
Yes.
Would you like to hear about something involving Dario Saric?
Can we call the Kings Bulls West? Are we allowed to do that yet?
The Kings are trading Jonas Valanciunas to the Nuggets for Dario Saric, according to Shams.
Are the Kings Bulls too? They could be Bulls too.
Did you see that they got a point guard also?
No, I can't keep up with all the news. Free agent guard Dennis Schroeder has agreed to a 3-year, $45 million deal with the Sacramento Kings, sources tell ESPN. Our friend Mark Bartlestein of Priority Sports.
You have to ask yourself, are you cool with the Bulls just kind of sitting it out? We know who all their position players are going to be. We know what they're going to be.
Well, we assume Giddy is signing with the Bulls. He really has nowhere else to go.
I agree with that statement. If he does go somewhere else, it will be very interesting what haul they get back.
Man, if the Bulls don't, that's what we need to examine in an upcoming topic. We need to do the thought exercise of what happens if Josh Giddey isn't a Bull next season.
Sign and trade.
That's when things get crazy.
Number one. With the division rival Cardinals on deck this 4th of July weekend, what do the Cubs need to accomplish in their three-game series with the Guardians, which begins today at Wrigley Field?
Well, you heard how I went on this diatribe about how I hate being shut out. I hate shutouts, unless you're the team shutting out the other team like they did against the Cardinals. So do that. Do the thing you did in the two games to finish out your series against St. Louis, where they won 8-0 and 3-0. You know why? Because one was a whoopin', and Jed Hoyer loves those, where the run differential is over 5, and the other one was just savvy. You know, sometimes you want your stopper, a.k.a. Shota Imanaga, or in today's case, Matt Boyd, to come in and do his thing. And then you're like, hey, here's our bullpen. Did you want to do more? You want to try to get more hits? No. You want to try to get those hits to like be not only on base, but then cross home plate? No, not happening. Some combination of Thielbar, Keller, Pomeranz, Palencia, Ken Pomflex. Get it done. Also, the bench needs to have more hits in pinch hitting situations. The end.
I thought you were done, but I didn't know the end was coming. My bad.
I just panic yelled that at the end of my exclamation.
Okay, so the Cubs, right?
They're P.S.
back.
No,
they're back
I'm
home. They're back home, and they have 6 games this week: 3 against the Guardians, 3 against the Cardinals. I'm going to just apply what I said at the start of the season, what I say at the start of any baseball season, what I say in the middle of any baseball season: when you are at home, win the series. When you are on the road, go 500. Now, the Bulls are only 25-15 at home this season, which means they're not winning 4 out of every 6 games. They're winning 3 out of every 5 games. That's not a high enough rate at home.
No, it's not. You're right.
But the Bulls are not a 500 team on the road either. They're 24-20 away from Wrigley Field. Here's why that's important. Take the 4 wins away. You're 20-20 on the road. And add them to your home record. You're 29-15. That's just one away from being what? A team that wins 2 out of every 3 games at home. So they're doing okay. They just need to win 2 out of 3 against the Guardians and then win 2 out of 3 against the Cardinals.
You know, if you took my 75% chance.
Yes.
I'm not going to quote Steiner math right now.
But then you take my 75% chance of winning if we used to go one-on-one.
Look, the Cubs are fine. They have a 2-game lead in the Central. And I promise you this, if they win all their home series and they go 500 on the road, they will win the division.
You make it sound so easy, but we know it's not.
Number two. The Bulls traded guard Lonzo Ball to the Cavaliers over the weekend and then signed guard Trey Jones to a 3-year, $24 million deal at the start of Trey Jones.
Who?
Trey Jones.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right, a 3-year, $24 million deal at the start of free agency for Trey Jones on Monday.
Jones!
With it being a foregone conclusion that Josh Giddey will sign a new deal to return to the Bulls, and you guys threw the wrinkle in it at the beginning of the segment. What, there's a sign and trade possibly in play for Giddey? You never know.
No, it's not happening. Okay. Arturis has told us exactly what is going to happen. Well, Mark Eversley reemphasized exactly who is going to be on this roster to start next season.
They've bet on their message.
Well, if the Bulls front office is going to indeed look at Josh Giddey as the guard of the future, here's the question. Which of the Bulls' remaining guards is most likely to be the odd man out on the Bulls' roster? Kobe White or Ayo Dosunmu?
It's the side for me.
I know. I'm so sad about it. I'm just sad. I think both of them are fantastic in their own rights. And I unfortunately think sometimes it comes down to who's whose guy situation. And they drafted Ayo. And they did not draft Kobe. And Kobe's price has gone up because also in popular culture terms, yesterday's price is not today's price with Kobe White. And
yesterday's price is not today's price.
The man says it well, but he also explains the truth. And that is the case for Kobe White. And as we've illustrated, the Bulls don't have a lot of flexibility under that cap, man. So unfortunately, based on those two things, I think it is probably pains me to say it, Kobe.
As far as who will be here, not sure. As far as who should be moved, but this doesn't matter because it's Arturis Karnišovas, so what should happen is not going to happen. But it should be Kobe White because you can get more back for Kobe White. You should trade Kobe White. Is Kobe White going to be here when Matas and Noah Essengay have reached their potential?
That's the question. And as I saw Deborah Cox perform two Sundays ago, nobody's supposed to be here.
How did we get here? Well, I know how we got here. You didn't want to make trades for future draft compensation. I'll say this. Both those guys fall under your yesterday's price is not today's price. Because Kobe White scheduled to make, what, $24 million next year? Or no, he's scheduled to make $12 million next year. $13 million basically next year. And then Ayo scheduled to make $7.5 million. I think both those guys will get more on the free agent market than they're currently making. Problem is they both become free agents. So you got to move one of them.
You know,
if not both.
In the vein of Trey Jones getting signed and our Mike Jones recall and Josh Giddey being brought up, he is the best example, perhaps, of back then the Thunder didn't want him. But now he's hot and the Bulls are all on him.
Except for it's not I'm the just saying, same people. That's the whole point.
That's why we remix it.
Okay, because you remixed to the remix to the remix on that one.
Look who's creeping and crawling and balling in the mix.
Wow. We're really...
We can't sing the rest of that song on the radio.
We've taken the Mike Jones lyrics to their extreme and also to their limit.
This segment is called Five on It, and we turn it into sports talk. Yeah. I rest my case.
Okay, you have a point there.
I've said that twice today.
You have a point there. But seriously, I think Ayo Dosunmu is more likely to be moved, although Kobe White should be more likely to be moved.
Number 3.
Five on It continues with Raheemian Harris on 670 The Score with this question. What was your favorite move on day one of NBA free agency? Which move did you find to be the most perplexing?
Now it's Marshall's turn to sigh.
No, I'm not. Aww. I'm not sighing like in the way that you think I am. I just think, oh man, when you look at the way the East has kind of fallen to this, whoever wants it can go get it, right?
Baby.
I think there's a lot of things that you can look at. I don't want to be alarmist on here, but I'm going to be a little bit alarmist.
Yeah.
Here. I really like the fact that the Pistons were able to...
Go on.
...twist what was a bad situation with Malik Beasley, who apparently... is have had liquidity issues with all that money he's made, and that's what ended up getting him to this central figure of an investigation by the FBI and a gambling probe.
That doesn't sound like it turned out well for him. This didn't end well.
And so the Pistons did something I don't know that the Bulls are capable of, which is they pivoted. They went out and they got Caris LeVert on a 2-year, $29 million deal, in addition to signing Paul Reed, but I think that was today, actually, B-Ball Paul. I like their ability to pivot. And it's just another reminder within the division that other teams seem to know what they're doing. As I said last night on our text thread, The Bulls are playing checkers and everyone else is playing chess, except for I'm wrong. The Bulls are playing Connect Four and everybody's playing chess, except for them.
Connect Four is fun when you play it in the giant Connect Four.
Yeah, I know, like out back in the backyard, on the back patio.
Any of those combos?
Yeah.
Everybody probably thinks that I would say D'Angelo Russell because he went to the Mavs on a 2-year, $13 million deal, and I thought it was savvy. I did. I'll stay in the Western Conference, though. I think it might be akin to my original report, if you'll recall, Luke Kornet going to the San Antonio Spurs. They're like, we're going to see you and raise you with our bigs. We're going to make them multifaceted. We're going to give that man 4 years and $41 million. Well, who's laughing now? Luke Kornet. But you can see there really is an emphasis on the bigs right now and the market they're in. Hint. But westward.
But the bigs that you're talking about, they all do something that the Bulls' bigs do not.
The multifaceted bigs, as in Capella, for example. Clint Capella goes to the Rockets, back to his original team for 3 years, $21.5 million. But to value Luke Kornet at 4 years and 41 with the Spurs?
He protects the rim, Layla.
The Spurs are building something.
The Bulls' big does not protect the rim. Vooch is not a rim protector.
And even shout out to Luka Garza. Luka Garza got money. Luka Garza got 2 years and $5.5 million. I remember on this show in this time slot hearing about how he wasn't an NBA guy. Look at that.
He's an NBA guy. He's a fringe NBA guy. How much money is he getting per year?
My predecessor was very anti-Luka Garza in the NBA. And I was like, I don't know. I think he's got something. Just saying that because I watched Iowa.
Why does he hate college stars who go to the NBA? Your predecessor.
Many reasons. I apologize.
As far as perplexing, I don't know that anything has stuck out. Like I expected the Bulls to have the most perplexing deal, honestly, but they surprised me and had a relatively good day.
I just talked about the ones I liked. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I asked this question because I thought that both of you guys would have something to say about those Sacramento Kings on the perplexing portion of the answer.
Oh, so like this could be today. I thought it was only yesterday.
It could be anything.
Did I think in 2025 that somebody would be trading for Dario Saric aggressively? No, I did not.
I'll say this. I don't know what they're doing in Sacramento, but I do think they are on the same, as far as I can tell so far, they're going to have the same problems the Bulls have. And when I say the Bulls have, I meant Bulls had, when they had two guys on the roster that did not fit well with the other pieces. Domantas Sabonis, Dennis Schroeder, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan. I don't understand how that's going to work on either end of the court. Either end of the court.
I also just want to give credit. I don't remember the user's name. I saw somebody tweet yesterday that Luke Kornet, by going to the Spurs, is now officially entering the Robert Horry arc.
Believe it or not, Jim Boylan said that he reminds him of Robert Horry.
Oh, it happened. He said it on camera in front of multiple cameras. We were trying to figure out why he was getting more minutes than Daniel Gafford at the time, a noted rim protector.
To complete the Robert Horry arc, if we're just going to say at least the Robert Horry arc is just being on the same teams as Robert Horry, he's going to have to make his way to the Lakers, the Suns, and the Rockets at some point.
Do you know the meltdown I had when I found out that Robert Horry had heard of the report? I still can't talk about it without
Robert
having
Horry
a meltdown.
Was very upset and insulted. He was not happy with that comparison.
It was Jim Boylan who said it. When a coach says it, you have to repeat what the coach says. I didn't say it.
More than just coach speech.
Number four.
Yesterday, the Dolphins sent cornerback Jalen Ramsey, tight end Jonnu Smith, and a 2027 seventh-round pick to the Steelers in exchange for safety Minkah Fitzpatrick and a 2027 fifth-round pick. Miami is now in conversations with multiple teams about trading for a tight end, according to NFL media. Today, according to Adam Schefter, Miami traded a conditional 2026 sixth-round pick to the Giants for a 2027 seventh-round pick and Darren Waller. Waller is coming out of retirement after agreeing to a one-year deal with the Dolphins worth up to $5 million. What do you think of these moves?
Okay, I know we don't have a ton of time for the next two questions, but I have a two-pronged thought process here.
I'm listening. I'm here for it.
Prong number one. those who were wondering if that meant that Cole Kmet might move weren't as wild as they may have thought. Because when new coaches come in, even though a general manager who hired both coaches at the time, the previous head coach and the current one, a la Bulls, the new head coach might say, hey, this guy doesn't fit in with my scheme as well. And you see a lot of people who you thought were made men suddenly out of town. So I thought, you know what? Cole Kmet is appreciated here. Doesn't necessarily mean that he is a perfect fit. So I didn't think it was so far-fetched. But prong number two was Darren Waller unretired to answer that question as to how the Dolphins were going to address this.
As long as he doesn't make a music video, I'm good with him. He made a music video once.
Don't watch it.
You
don't have to.
You haven't seen it,
so
right?
So I shouldn't Google Darren Waller music video.
No,
right
don't
now.
Don't Google that, and don't Google Darren Waller Kelsey Plum either.
That was a music video. I just thought of it as like a confession of sorts. I forgot about the music part of that.
Also, apologize to 773. Apparently, I referred to the Bulls as the Cubs twice by accident while we were talking about that.
It is really hard when news from multiple leagues are happening at the same time. Because my brain does shift gears. It's like baseball brain. Here are your baseball names. And then it's like, oh, the NFL is back in the conversation. Your baseball names are not going to get mixed in with your basketball names. You feel me? That was all a bunch of things together. My brain has no sense making right now.
Number five.
No, Marshall didn't even answer.
Oh, my bad. Go ahead.
It's okay. I'll say this. I think the Steelers' floor is 9-8. I think the Steelers' ceiling is Super Bowl. All right.
See, I was right to move on.
Number five.
I actually think he's closer to that argument after the trade was made. Like that you, I thought about you.
Arthur Smith loves him some Janu. That's all I'm going to say about that.
I value Minka Fitzpatrick, though.
Okay.
In honor of EA Sports announcing yesterday that they're bringing back their college basketball game a year after they brought back the college football game, which that college football game is awesome. I recommend it. The question is, the last question of Five on It with Rahimi and Harris, what's your favorite sports video game?
Mine is easy. It's very easy. Mine is 10 Yard Fight. The original football game on Nintendo Entertainment System, the 8-bit version. 10-Yard Fight is where I developed my love for football. Tecmo Super Bowl is where I perfected my love of playing football video games.
Ooh.
But you never forget your first love, 10-Yard Fight.
My first love was Tecmo Bowl.
Okay.
So I think in because of that, that is when you're growing up and your dad moved in from Iran and doesn't love football the way you do, you don't necessarily get the same sports influences growing up, but then you love sports because you're surrounded by it. Then I'm like, how am I going to get better at learning how to draw up plays? As one tends to ask themselves, you know, as a junior high kid. That's definitely on my mind at the time. Tecmo Bowl entered the picture. So we play Tecmo Bowl growing up. Now, was that the timelines don't add up? That was a much older game based on my age, but that's what we had, and that's how I learned. I learned from there, and then I talked to high school football coaches who helped me out, and that's how I became better at football. And some are all in Madden, and that's who taught me football.
Shout out to the O'Bannon brothers for getting that whole lawsuit sorted away, so now all the kids get paid.
See, I love video games. Sports video games is exclusively what I play. You guys had great answers, but this one's the best one. EA Sports MVP Baseball 2005. I still play it today. It is the best baseball game. It's kind of a reason why I love baseball.
It's not the best baseball game. It's just the one that is closest tied to your nostalgia of childhood video games.
No, it's the best. It's the best.
How old were you in 2005?
I was 10.
Like I said,
I still play it. I played it yesterday. I literally, every time I go home, I take my PS2 and I still play it.
Nostalgia is a hell of a drug.
I'm not a big video game guy, but back in the day when I was a kid, it's NFL Blitz for me, dog.
Okay.
NFL Blitz on N64.
I mean, I was up in the arcade doing that thing.
Yeah, it was arcade too.
But yeah, N64 at home, yeah.
Ask me if I... Yeah, that was a trance. I just broke out of my trance and knew exactly what video game system that was on. We have more coming up here on Rahimi and Harris on The Score. Next, a man who knows no extreme place when it comes to throwing out ideas for trades and transactions.
No chill.
He will think out loud with the best of them. Jim Bowden, the former general manager and now national writer for The Athletic. He is coming up next on Rahimi and Harris on The Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The Cubs are going to win the trade deadline in the NL Central. They're everywhere right now. And they're willing to part with Owen Cassie, one of their top power-hitting outfield prospects, as part of the package. And Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins literally are everywhere. I mean, as I talk to people in the industry, they're all in. And they're going to do what it takes to win.
That was our next guest. He was on foul territory and now joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. It is Jim Bowden, the former Major League General Manager. He's an analyst and insider for CBS Sports, The Athletic, MLB Network Radio, SiriusXM. You can find him in a lot of different places, and he's not afraid to share a sports thought. Jim, thank you for joining us on Rahimi and Harris on The Score.
Hey, thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
Jim, we're excited to talk to you about the Cubs. I want to start with some not revisionist history. I just want to see if things are still the same, because one of the things you published in The Athletic a few weeks ago really caught the eye/ire of Cubs fans when you suggested that they should send Cade Horton, Owen Casey, Kevin Alcantara, and shortstop Ronnie Cruz to the Marlins for Sandy Alcantara. Do you stand by that today, or has Alcantara's ups and downs, mostly downs, affected the way you feel about the haul and what should be the return for the Marlins?
Yeah, it's a huge haul. And of course, I was looking at it from the Marlins perspective and going back in history and looking at what the Washington Nationals got for Juan Soto. Certainly that kind of package doesn't work unless you're convinced that Sandy Alcantara is an ace, unless you think he is a Cy Young Award winner that he was a couple of years ago. And if he's that level, then that is probably the return that's going to take. But it would be really steep for the Cubs to do that. Highly unlikely that that's where they end up. That being said, there's no doubt. I'm working on an article for The Athletic that is going up tomorrow morning where I did an anonymous poll of all the GMs and presidents in baseball. And it was very interesting to me because Owen Cassie, the minor league outfielder at AAA who was in the Yu Darvish deal, is a name that just keeps coming up everywhere in the industry, which makes it clear that the Cubs are everywhere trying to get better and trying to add pitching.
And I actually appreciate you mentioning Owen Casey, Jim, because I feel like it touches on something else. I love to talk about like a second generation of a trade, or, you know, a trade tree where one transaction leads to so many others. I know that's a big part of what you do. And when you consider that the only name that gets brought up from that Yu Darvish trade that happened back in December of 2020 is Casey, who isn't yet online, and this is 2025 now, it makes you really understand how catastrophic a deal like that can be for a team like the Cubs, who want to be flexible now when their window is right now.
Yeah, no question. I mean, that could be catastrophic. At the same time, making a trade of Javier Baez on his free agent year and getting Pete Crow Armstrong, although it took a few years to get here, and now you have a superstar, it's probably worth it, right? And that's what you get with prospects. Prospects are never a slam dunk. They never live up to the hype. In fact, I've always told people, if you really want to do some history on this, go back and look at MLB Pipeline or Baseball America or The Athletic or any website you want, and look at the prospect, top 10 prospects of each organization over the last 20 years. And look how many made it and look how many didn't. And go back in history and look at how many times you didn't want your team to trade a particular prospect or two that ended up absolutely being nothing. And then you probably regret it now that you had that opinion back then. So you got to remember with prospects, yeah, there's some slam dunkers. Yes, there are some that are not high risk. But at the end of the day, most of them are not going to live up to the expectations of the fans.
We're talking with Jim Bowden, national writer for The Athletic, former senior VP and general manager for the Cincinnati Reds and Washington Nationals for over a decade and a half, here on Rahimi and Harris. Back to what you just said, Jim, about the prospects who don't make it. How much, in your experience and in your observation post front office, do you think the level of development matters in trying to assess whether someone's going to pan out, whether you're taking a guy at low or high A versus a guy who is at triple A and is seemingly banging on the door, but maybe doesn't have a spot on a major league roster at his current organization. How much does that make a difference in predicting someone's success?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes a difference. And I think today being able to predict success over the last, I'm going to say 2 to 3 years, is much better than it's ever been. I mean, the analytics and the science behind evaluating players is at the best it's ever been, and it is much different than it was 5 to 6 years ago. That being said, the human element is the most important part, and that is something that is not measured by analytics. It's not measured by science, and it's measured by opinion on the people that are evaluating makeup, character, competitiveness, work ethic, what their life is off the field, all of those intangibles. And that plays such a huge part in the development of a player or the regression of a player. And it's the most important part, and you can't measure it, right? So it's a matter of the homework that each organization's do, and those organizations that do the best at that particular part of developing or predicting success are the ones that usually do the best in the long run. And it's very clear when you look at results, especially over the last 5 to 6 years.
Jim, just going back to the Sandy Alcantara discussion for a second, where do you think his most likely landing spot is?
You know, it's very interesting because you brought up the point earlier in this interview where you talked about him having a down year and how he's been inconsistent, although he has allowed 3 runs or less in 4 of his last 5 starts and has pitched much better over his last 5 starts. You know, that being said, I've kind of looked at it on the outside and I've said to myself, because he's having a down year, why would the Marlins trade him now? Why wouldn't you wait, let him have a strong August and September, and then trade him in the offseason? He's very affordable. You control him for 3 more years. And so to me, it makes a lot of sense to wait until the value's back. That's just my outside opinion. However, when I talked to over 40 executives in the industry over the last week, it's very clear that the industry believes he is the most likely pitcher to be traded at this year's deadline. Mm. So obviously there has to be a lot of GMs and presidents out there that believe what they're watching recently with Alcantara, that believe that he is going to get back that Cy Young form. It's really hard to get a number one starter. We all know what the cost is. All you have to do is go look at the $200 million-plus that the Yankees gave Max Fried or the Arizona Diamondbacks gave Corbin Burns. You know what that cost is. That's not the cost to get Alcantara for the next few years, which makes his trade value extremely high. So if teams, in fact, believe that he's healthy and believe that he's only going to keep getting better, as he has shown in his last few starts, then I guess it makes sense. And so, you know, perhaps I normally guess on what the industry tells me because the GMs and the presidents are the ones making these deals, not those of us on the outside. And it's the GMs and the presidents that have done their homework on his medicals. They've done their homework on how he looks on a nightly basis. So, yeah, I think based on what they're telling me, I'm guessing he will be dealt and it will be a haul and it will be one of those moments.
So, as we're talking to Jim Bowden, national writer for The Athletic, front office man for the Cincinnati Reds and Washington Nationals for over 15 years before turning the pen and the opinion to us, the media. I got to ask you, Jim, looking at what's available starting pitching wise or what you think will be available at the deadline, who are the top 3 or 4 starting pitching targets outside of Alcantara who's gotten so many headlines so far?
Yeah, so what's interesting about this is, as the GMs and presidents are telling me, we don't really know who's selling yet, and we're probably 3 weeks away from knowing that. That being said, it's very clear the Pirates are offering Mitch Keller and Andrew Haney. They're both on the board. Until Zach Eflin just went on the injury list with back discomfort, he was talked about. Most teams are looking at Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly as 2 guys that are going to get moved once the Diamondbacks realize they need to sell. Right now, they want to buy and only 4 games out. Most GMs think that's going to change over the next 3 weeks. We've also heard the name of Edward Cabrera, Sandy Alcantara's teammate, quite a bit. He's 27 years old. He's controllable through 2028. Although he's arbitration eligible this offseason, which is something, as we all know, the Marlins don't love. He's made 13 starts this year. He's got an ERA under 4. He's got 69 punchouts in 64 innings, and if control and command get better, he's got a higher upside, and so teams may be willing to pay a higher price for him, which puts him on this list and makes sense.
I also want to ask you, Jim, what do you think the Cubs should do?
I think the Cubs should keep adding pitching. Look, I predicted the Cubs in March would win this division. I stand by that. I think, obviously, the injury to Justin Steele was significant. I'm hoping Matthew Boyd can pitch this well the rest of the year. You don't know, though, when the innings start to add up. I would like to see them get another starter. I would like to see them get another reliever, and I believe they're going to do both. And I say that in strong confidence. They have a very strong farm system, and I'm being told by GMs in this industry that they are absolutely everywhere, talking about everybody. So I strongly believe that Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins are going for it, and they will make a big move or two between now and July 31st.
We continue our conversation with Jim Bowden, who is the national writer for The Athletic, also the lead MLB analyst and insider for CBS Sports HQ here on Raheemy and Harris. Jim, looking at where the Cubs are right now and looking at the fact that there are so few sellers right now, do you think it's prohibitive for them to put everything on the table? I mean, you talked about the fact that they're going all out to try to win this year with Kyle Tucker in the fold. I don't know how much Kyle Tucker is going to cost, but it seems like the Cubs are at least interested if it doesn't get too excessive what he's asking for.
Well, it's going to get excessive. So if you don't want to do excessive, you're probably not going to get him. I've said this before. I'll stand by it. He's going to get a six in front of his number. He's going to get $600 million. Yeah, I mean, Guerrero got $500, and Tucker's a better player. Great defender, great arm, and they're just few and far between. When you're in your 20s like he is, he's going to age well. You can feel comfortable giving him a 10 or 12 year contract, and he's a complete player. There's nothing he can't do. You guys are witnessing it. I mean, he's an all-star player that hits for average, hits for power, steals bases, great defender, has a great arm. He does the full package. They're really hard to come by. And so, you know, if you're going to look at the price of Soto at 765 and Guerrero at 500, I think it's fair to place him at 600. Now, the question is, who is the team that's going to step up and pay him that? I don't have the answer to that, but I do believe it's going to end up in that area. I don't know if the Cubs will play in that area. Time will tell.
No, I appreciate you saying that, Jim, because I remember you were quoted as saying that before the season even began. And we did wonder if that price had changed just because of what you're seeing in the market and what you're seeing out of teams. So I think even resetting that and saying you still think that's a number is valid information right now at this point.
Well, yeah, and I think it's always about supply and demand, right? I mean, the exceptions are those position players in their 20s that you project that are going to age well, and they get paid. They just do. But the industry changed with Ohtani and Soto and Guerrero. The entire landscape changed. I mean, these players used to be $350 million, which would have been the normal rate, but that's not where we are anymore, and you can't sit there and deny it. This market will be limited. You know, that's the other part of this thing. There won't be a lot of teams playing at that number. There'll only be a handful, two or three teams. But just remember this. It only takes one. It only takes one team to make that kind of offer. And there's a clear fit in the big markets, right? There's a clear fit with the Philadelphia Phillies. Just a perfect fit to replace Nick Castellanos in right field. There's a clear fit with the New York Yankees. After losing out on Soto, they got a chance to get a better player for less money. So, you know, those are two big markets as an example, among others, that probably will be playing on there. So if you just take Yankees, Cubs, Phillies, that's enough for one of them to give him $600 million if that's his market.
And then, Jim, I know we've got to let you go, but really quickly, in honor of it being July 1st, what's the most player-friendly contract where you saw a guy keep getting paid that you've seen?
The player-friendly contract or club-friendly contract?
Player. Like where a guy just kept getting money since it's Bobby Bonilla Day.
Oh, I see what you did on that. Well, Juan Soto is the answer at $765 million. No one else can come close to that. He's the most overpaid player this game has ever seen and probably will be.
Oh, I knew we'd get a hot take in there somewhere.
I don't know that it's that hot.
I like it. I like the concept. Thank you so much, Jim, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Jim.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, guys.
That's Jim Bowden, the former general manager. He's also now with The Athletic, CBS Sports. You can find him everywhere. He's on foul territory, too, joining us here in Raheemy and Harris on The Score. We stay in that vein. It is Sports Capitalism Day, it being July 1st and Bobby Bonilla Day. I think we have to listen to what he himself had to say about it. And if you go down memory lane, just like we did even a short time ago with Jim, there are some contracts that you may have forgotten about that looked wild at the time and now look like a ridiculous bargain even now. That's next on The Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
What a perfect song for this. This is Rahimi and Harris on The Scores. We broadcast live from The Scores Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. It is fitting that on July 1st, we observe Bobby Bonilla Day.
It's my favorite sports holiday.
Still getting paid. It used to also be the first day of NBA free agency, but they backed it up to June 30th now. So it's not the same day, which kind of stinks, but this is the day where all the deals are getting done. In fact, you have another new Milwaukee Bucks.
Is that Jericho Sims?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Shams Charania pointed that out. Agreed to a two-year deal with the Bucks, including a player option in the second season. Sims played in a career-high 53 games last season and all 5 playoff games.
Sims is a guy who...
Well, you stay a Milwaukee Bucks, I should say.
Definitely has upside. So... the Bucks are building around Giannis as they should in a weakened Eastern Conference. Who knows what will happen? But I like what they're doing. And the great thing about this is it's the first bite at the apple with the free agency and the signs and trades and all that. You're getting another bite leading into the actual trade deadline midseason. That should also be a bonanza, depending on how many teams feel like they have a shot.
Well, and that's it, right? We wanted to see flexibility, at least now that this is a new salary cap and tax structure. So... as long as we're continuing to see deals paired with draft picks that usually give teams flexibility.
I feel like you're attacking me right now. I feel like you're attacking me because you know how I feel about draft compensation.
We love draft compensation. That's why we want to see more of it. Here, wink.
Nod.
So Bobby Bonilla is 62, and he's going to collect another check for roughly $1.2 million. It's $1,193,248.20. From the Mets, as he has and will every July 1st from 2011 through 2035.
Can I just point something out?
Yes.
That payout is not the same as it was in 2011. It does not hit the same.
No.
Inflation is very real.
Even for the middle class of baseball, like Bobby Bonilla, we just had Jim Bowden on. He talked about Juan Soto's contract. But then we got to thinking about not just Bobby Bonilla, but all the other deals that have come across that you might say, oh, that was a really ridiculous deal at the time, but it's not necessarily anymore. Chris Davis, do you remember his deal with the Baltimore Orioles? Chris with a C, not with a K.
Refresh me.
Chris Davis signed a 7-year, at the time you thought it was crazy in 2016, $161 million contract.
It's still a little bit crazy considering what he did after.
A large portion of that money was deferred. That included $9.16 million annually from 2023 to 2025. The Orioles, I thought it was a joke. Like, oh yeah, they're still paying Chris Davis. Giggle? No. They are literally still paying Chris Davis. Followed by $3.5 million annually from 2026 to 2032. And then $1.4 million annually from 2033 to 2037, totaling $42 million in deferred payments.
So he turned $9 million into $40-plus million, is what you're saying?
It's the way he's getting paid. So $9.16 million annually for 2 years. Well, really three, 2023, 2024, 2025. Then $3.5 million starting in 2026. Then $1.4 million.
Oh, so he's not earning the interest a la Bobby Bonilla. He's just getting his money later a la Allen Iverson Reebok because we don't know if you can manage your money.
It's a funnel. No, I think it's what the Orioles had to do to afford that contract.
Oh, just to be able to pay it.
Correct. And, you know, there's Shohei Ohtani's deferrals, but that was a different discussion as to how that was set up. Similar concept.
Also, though, is that why the Orioles can't afford to spend money now on their current team, which should be better than it is?
Well, didn't you bring up that Matt Holliday is getting paid more than Jackson Holliday?
Yeah, Jackson Holliday's still making $765,000,
yeah,
I believe.
Yeah, he's on that rookie
and
deal.
Matt's over $1 million in deferred money.
And Matt's is from the Cardinals, right?
Yes. So, yeah, it's a real thing. Now, the Bobby Bonilla Day thing, What makes that interesting is because it's the, it's crazy. It's the $1.1 million, and it was a buyout for $5.9 million. $5.9 million.
Yeah.
That so to get paid over...
That was the annuity option.
Yeah. To get paid over $30 million with that interest rate, like, what? It's a windfall for Bobby.
Credit to Dennis Gilbert. Dennis Gilbert was the agent who helped him get that contract, or as he is lovingly referred to by one Oswaldo Guillen, Gogo. Because that is an agent that really is on your side. That is the agent you should ask for in every aspect of life.
I can't believe how this thing has gone for Bobby Bonilla and the fact that we're still talking about this right now.
And will be for many years to come.
Well, only 10 more years, though. We're almost through it. We're almost through it. Only a decade more as we discuss the Bobby Bonilla holiday known as Bobby Bonilla Day every July 1st here on Raheemy and Harris. This man gets paid $1.2 million from 2011 through 2035 because the Mets back in 2000 decided to buy out the remaining $5.9 million on Bonilla's contract. And instead of paying the $5.9 million at the time, they instead said, we'll make you annual payments of nearly $1.2 million for 25 years. Including a negotiated 8% interest rate.
He's going to be 72 when they stop paying him.
The Mets are paying Bobby Bonilla how you'd have to pay off your student loans, basically. It's not pretty.
So we have audio from the man himself.
Oh, hit that.
We should. Let's listen.
Every July 1st, I get paid $1.2 million till 2035. Doesn't suck. Doesn't suck.
That's what I'm working towards, right there, hitting the ball like you. I'm going to put the work into it.
You're a grinder, I'll give you that.
Well, I'll grind.
I just wanted to be able to spend as if I was an active player in retirement. That assurance that I'm able to take care of everybody, that's peace of mind everybody should enjoy. Guaranteed income, steady, simple, and secure. Nothing wrong with that. What are you doing on July 1st?
He should be working. That sounds like a commercial for a wealth management fund and retirement fund. That's what that sounds like.
Oh, are you kidding?
He's playing golf.
If I'm a wealth management fund, I'm either getting some sort of Bobby Bonilla spokesperson or somebody adjacent. That was from Front Office Sports, which is also an excellent group who talks about the business of sports.
How happy did that man sound right there?
Sounds like a man who have to worry where his next paycheck is coming from.
Once a year.
May we all secure the bag someday like Bobby Bonilla. Although I feel like every year it's getting harder and harder. Coming up next, we have more baseball discussion as we get ready for the Cubs and Guardians with a 3-game set. And we also will react to some of what Jim Bowden had to say because he's not afraid of opinions. He's not afraid to throw things out there. Additionally, we have something for you. They're not low rates. We're going to be giving away tickets to Adam Sandler. So keep listening. You can get a chance to win a pair of tickets to Adam Sandler's You're My Best Friend tour. It makes its stop at the United Center on October 20th. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster.com, but we are going to give some away here on the show. And Raheemy and Harris on the Score. Up next, more baseball.